On this episode of Still Loading, what, she's a girl? Hey guys, welcome to the new episode of Still Loading. It's me, Josh, and with me today is my friend Casey.
Hey everyone, how are you doing?
And today, since I spoke about Gunpei Yokoi last episode, today we're going to be talking about one of the most influential games he developed, Metroid. So to kind of start off, I just figured we kind of get, our opinions on the game. Like, what do you think of it, Casey?
I think it's groundbreaking. I mean, it clearly spawned influence with other games. Symphony of the Night being one of them, even though Metroidvanias, exactly. As the original Metroid, I enjoy it for its time. I think it was great, but it's so difficult that sometimes it's hard to find.
And we were just playing it.
Like, exactly.
We just wrapped up a small session play to just kind of refresh ourselves on the controls. Mm-hmm. Did the controls feel a little floaty to you?
A little bit, but I thought they were pretty well. They definitely hold up to today's standards, I believe.
Well, I also wonder how much of it could be, like, we're playing on an HDTV, so there is input delay.
Exactly.
Input lag, but I thought the controls were a little floaty, but still it holds up, like, it gets, you know, it does the job well. So I guess, like, one of the things I really liked about it was its, like, game design. That's one of the reasons, like you said, it's so influential. And so, you know, it was really interesting because every game, well, not every game, but most games up until then always went from left to right.
Yep.
You could never go back to the left. And so what this game does right off the bat is you'll go to the right instinctively as you do, and you kind of figure out the controls, learn how to jump, learn how to fire. And the game tests you by, to get up to the first door, you have to learn how to jump. You have to hit the A button to get to that first door. Then you shoot the first door and you realize, like, okay, this is how I open doors. That's kind of interesting. And then you walk through it and you find, you go through, I think, another set of doors after the next room, and you hit a wall with a tiny little crevice and you have nowhere to go. So what do? Go back to the left. And that, like, since then, it influenced a whole genre of games.
Everyone knows exactly what to do the second this, you start a new game. You just go right to the left, get the morph ball, and go forward. It's very instinctive at this point.
Mm-hmm. And like almost, even like on Metroid Prime, I would argue they do stuff like, I mean, it's a little bit more complicated go to the left.
Yeah, but they definitely pay a little bit of a homage to its origins in a tongue-in-cheek kind of way.
Do you think it suffers a little bit from, like, a Zelda type of thing of just repeating the same power-ups over and over again?
That's actually a good question. Are you talking about from in the game itself, or are you talking about, like, you know, as
the series?
The series, yeah. In that case, yeah.
Because obviously in the original Metroid, it was the first time we saw it, so that wasn't an original at that point.
Right, exactly. They definitely did include, like, I mean, of course they included, like, different kinds of power-ups as the series progressed, but, you know, a lot of it wasn't really unique, I wouldn't say, as time went on. A lot of it was, as you said, like, the same Legend of Zelda-type power-ups.
Am I going to get the bow next? It's always the morph ball, bombs, that kind of crap.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, from, I like how they introduced the spider ball in Metroid 2, like that, and how you can actually, like, crawl up the walls and stuff. That was really cool.
Tough section, too. Yeah. Those are some tough parts.
And in Super Metroid, you get the grapple beam. Like, I thought, you know, when they actually do introduce new power-ups, like, they're really
unique interesting.
And they're really interesting, yeah.
Well, what I always like about, especially, I mean, I think that's why I cover old video games. Old video games on this podcast more than current ones. Because I did an episode on the Switch, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I think the reason I cover old ones more than new ones is because it astounds me how much of modern gaming is seen in those old games. Like, you never really realize how much they drew on, how much game developers now draw on the lessons from the old games. And even, like, you mean, you look at all the Nintendo first-party titles and how influential they are. I mean, half of it was luck, because no one knew how to make a good game back then. But, like, whoever designed Metroid went in with a purpose. They knew what they wanted, and they tried something different, because everything was just a Mario clone, or and not a lot of Zelda clones, because not a lot of games did that. I mean, on the NES at least, there was many much later on. But I don't think... Can you think of a lot of Zelda clones? I mean, I know we're talking about Metroid, but just
other
small
than,
sidebar.
Other than that, probably the only one that comes to mind is Star Tropics.
Yeah. And well, that was an American-only release, I think. Or no, for... It was it was geared towards America, I think, Star Tropics.
Probably, yeah. I really can't think off the top of my head.
But in any case, like it kind of like took the idea of Zelda and... didn't turn it on its head. It didn't like just 180 it, but it it definitely took that exploration feel of Zelda and made it into like, I mean, it's heavily inspired by the Alien series, basically made it into something like that. Like you're fighting, it's more sci-fi than fantasy.
Right. Yeah. And they definitely, I mean, going back to the whole, you know, is this going to be suffering from, I guess, Zelda syndrome in terms of power-ups. This was just something that I happen to know about. You know how Samus gets different suits, you know, like various suits and things like that. You know, it's similar to the different tunics that Link gets in, like, you know, Link to the Past and
The
other games to, you know, help not take as much damage. There was actually, it was actually supposed to be pronounced Barrier Suit, but it was a mistranslation.
And it says Various
Suit? Yeah, Various Suit,
It's funny, like, know what book series I have not read these yet, but I've heard about them, and I think you would like them, too. It's called The Legends of Localization.
Okay.
And basically, I don't know if they've done a Metroid one yet, but it's a whole book series about the process in which a game started in Japan and got translated to English and came to America. It's not just the translation process. It was also, you know, like, the weird things they decided to censor, the weird things they decided to change in the game. I mean, you can even look at games like Final Fantasy VI on the Super Nintendo. Like, I think it was Shiva or maybe one of the other summons. In the Japanese version, she has a bare ass, like, right, showing right out there for the kids. And then in the U.S. version, it was covered. And in the European version, it was a little less covered. It was kind of like a hybrid. It was like a cloth was over her butt as opposed to just nothing. And in the U.S. version, it's just a skirt.
It's funny you say that because,
and I wonder what kind of things they change. That's what I was trying to
say. Oh, yeah, no, I'm kind of piggybacking off of what you're saying and then kind of segueing off topic has nothing to do with Metroid.
Oh, but, that's fine. It's just based on it all roundabout.
Yeah, but, just based on what you're saying, you know, how different, regions got different, versions of the game based on censorship and things like that. I know Super Mario World, I can't think of the level off the top of my head, but with the dolphins, Yoshi can eat the dolphins in the Japanese version, can't in the American because of animal rights.
I think on the Game Boy Advance version of Super Mario World, you could.
Okay.
That was the first American iteration of that. It's like
I never
one of those
even
random
attempted,
facts.
So I wasn't sure. Yeah.
It's one of those random facts I read somewhere online. But and that makes me, but kind of to bring it back to Metroid, it makes me wonder what they did change. Mm-hmm. I'm going to actually look it up after we're done recording here to see like what they like if there is a Legends of Localization book on it. There is one. There's a full book on Zelda alone, which I think would be a cool read. Like you said, the barrier suit turned into the various suit. I wonder how much they changed with Samus. You can I mean, spoiler alert, Samus is a girl.
Oh, no way.
Not a 30-year-old secret. It's 30-year-old spoiler. Actually, I think Metroid came out in 86.
Yeah.
So it is. This might actually
just
be
had
the 30
years, yeah.
Hold on. Sorry, listeners. This is what
Zelda,
it's called.
Zelda came out in 86. Metroid, I believe, came out in 86.
I'm just like, I'm totally being professional on a podcast and looking it up on while recording, because that's not... Oh, yeah, in 86 it was released on the Famicom Disk System.
87 NES?
87 in the U.S. So, I know what's interesting, you know, like in the U.S. version, just in thinking of that localization, one of the things they changed was the save system. In the U.S. it was a password system.
Yeah.
On the Japanese disc system, it was like a save system like Zelda.
That's actually pretty neat, yeah.
They had three save slots, just like they did on Zelda. I mean, I think it'd be really cool, like, to get my hands on a Japanese, like, a Famicom disc system. It's really hard to get. Two, Japanese Famicoms are very hard to get the video to work on an American television,
right.
Apparently. I think it'd be awesome. But it was originally released on the disc system, and it's crazy. Did you know there's a lot of games that were, like, Zelda was, Castlevania was, or at least Castlevania 3, I think. I don't remember. I could be 100% off with the Castlevania one, but I know Zelda and Metroid were on it. But so it had a save system on the Japanese version. So, I mean, who knows what else they changed, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things I like is the art aesthetic. It kind of, how it makes, it's a very isolationist feel, you know?
Mm-hmm. And the game, I mean, of course it still holds up today, but they're always doing some kind of re-releases of some sort. I mean, you know, with the Wii, with the, on the Wii Shop, mm-hmm. Wii U, Classic NES series, that's the new hot Christmas gift, you know, everyone's all over, that's on it there.
I really want that.
I remember, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, honestly.
That'll be a topic for another episode. For but sure. The one thing I will say about it, I like that they have it in HD. Going out in HDMI, which is nice, because unless you want to spend $1 million on a upscaler
mm-hmm.
for your TV, it's not worth it.
Yeah, but I remember in 2004 when I know they released it because the classic NES Game Boy, SP, which I still have, they're releasing different classic NES games for, you know, like Bomberman, Super Mario Brothers, Dr. Mario, Ice Climbers, I don't know.
Probably even Castlevania.
Yeah, the original Castlevania.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it, because it's kind of ugly box art, but they have the Game Boy Advance box, and they just kind of photoshopped the NES box onto the game.
It's pretty funny,
it's pretty lazy.
I got, I went to go buy, when I was 14 at the time, Metroid for the NES, classic NES series for the SP. I thought it's still great. it's so much fun.
Well, and like you were saying before, it's one of the toughest games out there.
It really
is. With no map system and mm-hmm. like the way the upgrades work.
That's my main issue with the game right now. I mean, some people see that as more fun and more challenging, because if you have a map, it's like, okay, you know where to go. You can get a general sense, but for me, it's kind of like I get very impatient at points, where it's like, okay, this isn't fun anymore.
I mean, I know this is kind of off topic, but like, I think as adults, it's a lot harder for us to keep our attention spans. And I don't think it's necessarily because we have shorter attention spans, it's because our time is, I mean, maybe it's because of that, but like, I think it also affects, our time is more precious as an adult now. Like, as a kid, you just have hours and you don't care. As an adult, you're like, all right, I only have 4 hours to play this game tonight, like,
right,
before
exactly.
I have to go to bed and wake up the next morning for work. So I want to make it count. I don't want to spend 4 hours in one room mm-hmm. trying to figure out what the fuck I'm doing.
Exactly, yeah. I was actually just playing Super Mario Sunshine this past Sunday, just for the heck of it, because I wanted to. And normally, I don't really play too many of the games I used to play, even though I have a ton of them, and I would love to. It's just like, I would like to go forward and see what else there is out there.
The burden of a collector.
Exactly.
You keep buying, but
it's
you
a
never
shame.
Play.
I know. I just put on the shelf and let it collect dust. But I saw my file, and this wasn't my original copy with my original save file. Like, I originally got it in 2002 when it first came out. That was the only Mario game, because I didn't grow up with Super Mario 64. I grew up with World, and I didn't have an N64 growing up. I had PS1. But that was the only game where I got 120 stars, or shine sprites.
Really?
Yeah, and I, looking back, you know, as a kid, I had all the time in the world to do that. You know, as an adult now, I'm going back and I'm like, how did I do that? Like, some of these levels are pretty ridiculous. I must have spent, like, hours.
Hours just trying to crack them.
And going back, trying to play Metroid, we were just playing, and I'm just like, man, I don't know if I had the patience for this. This is ridiculous.
Well, and how many times did you hear that annoying beeping sound from your energy being too low?
Exactly, yeah.
Another thing, I guess, the game kind of started and innovated with is, like, a health system. This is the first game that, like, you know, more than 2 or 3 hits and you would die, and you wouldn't die, you know. And Mega Man, you had that, and you could recuperate your health after killing enemies, and same with this.
Right.
But this, you could collect health packs, so it wasn't just, all right, I have this set amount of health, and if I lose it, then it's dead, then I'm dead, and I can replenish it, but I will never get more than this. Metroid, you could keep getting more
right.
and more energy tanks.
And that was the cool thing about Mega Man, how they started implementing energy tanks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just basing it off of X, because that's my all-time favorite one.
I did a whole episode on that.
I listened to some of that, actually, believe it or not. Yeah, that's such a great game.
It's a very good game.
But I thought when they re-released Metroid for as Metroid Zero Mission for the Advance, mm-hmm. I thought it was very well done. I loved how it was played on the Fusion engine.
A lot of people actually say that's like the best version of the original Metroid game.
It really is.
Because it took all the lessons they learned from the years up to mm-hmm. Metroid 2, Super Metroid, and was Metroid Prime out yet when that came out?
Yes, Metroid Prime. Actually, I have a story about it. Yeah, what were we saying though?
Story.
No problem. Yeah, so I've heard about Metroid as a kid, but I never actually played it because shooters weren't really my thing. Platformer shooters. I mean, unless it was Mega Man X, because I grew up with that and I freaking love that game.
Yeah.
But it was November 2002. It was actually it was a Sunday because it was the first. I have such a weird memory when it comes to these kinds of things. It's so bizarre.
This is my favorite part about old video games.
Yeah.
It's people's memories.
You can remember it, yeah.
Even if I did not personally experience it, mm-hmm. it makes me happy to listen to
it. I'm the same way. I'll listen to podcasts that'll be like, I remember getting this game, and because how detailed they get, it's like, I wasn't there, but I enjoy it.
So finish.
But, it was a Sunday. It was Sunday. I think it was probably about a week after it came out. It was the first week of Advent. It was a Sunday, and I was at Target with my mom, and how I had money to buy it, I don't know. I was 12 years old. I don't know how I got the money, but I bought, I was like, you know what? First of all, by the artwork alone, I thought this was really neat, and just the name, and I was
Samus does strike a stunning pose.
Exactly, yeah. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna buy this, see what happens, and, you know, it looks fun, why not? So I bought it with the strategy guide, and I went home, and I'm not kidding. I played it like 3 hours. Did nonstop. It was so much fun, and looked back.
The thing is,
still my favorite Metroid game.
My roommate recently played through Metroid Prime 2, and the mm-hmm. graphics on the GameCube still hold up on those games. Like the art design on the art direction on those games is so good.
Mm-hmm.
The like Super Metroid included, as well as even back to the original NES one, like the one, I guess, to bring it full circle.
Yeah,
the original NES game, the artwork is really well done. Like I love how all they really do is just swap color palettes in the original one.
Yeah,
but it's effective. They don't just take the same tiles and be like, all right, let's just change the color. They modify the tiles a little bit,
yep.
So you can. It's a very clear distinction of where you're at based on the color
mm-hmm.
of what it is, and that it was cool because that was essentially a way for them to guide you through this world without actually taking you by the hand.
Yep,
and that kind of game design that's huge because now. That now developers know how to do that. I mean, now granted, I would say games are now too much like they're going kind of back to, well, not going back. They're degressing further than that. But in terms of like they hold the player's hands too much. And
yeah.
I don't mean like games can be hard, but when a game's press A to press A,
yeah.
like, well, I didn't know to do that.
Yeah, and it's just crazy how much of a discrepancy in terms of difficulty from like the NES days to today. Like, for example, we were just playing Metroid and I'm just, this is crazy, you know. I mean, granted, there are games for, you know, the current gen that are just, you
want to pull your hat.
Dark Souls, exactly. But, I'm currently playing Rise of the Tomb Raider for PS4. I just got the 20th anniversary. It's really fun.
I haven't played the newest one.
It's really good.
Yeah.
But if you ever get lost, like, you can just hit the R3 button and it'll, you'll...
Just point you in the right direction.
You'll tap into your survival mode.
It's weird, though. At the same time, though... don't worry about that. It's a selfie stick I got for free. from somebody. But the thing I always think we forget, like, we always talk about how hard the games were, but back then you actually had to read the manuals.
Yeah.
Now, like, they don't even come with manuals anymore. Yeah. It comes with a slip of paper saying, like, hey, warning, this could cause seizures.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Or, like, oh, check out these other titles made by Square Enix or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm not knocking it, but, like, there's just something fun about how many times would you bring your video game manuals to family outings when you maybe didn't have a handheld or something like that? And I know we're kind of going all the way roundabout, like, we kind of jump off topic from Metroid a lot, but, like, Metroid brings me back to that point in my childhood where I remember that. I remember And the whole manual thing, I just remember bringing, like, Halo 2. That was the big one for me. But, like, I can just picture how many kids would get that Metroid game manual when they got the game and bring it along with them to Thanksgiving because they knew they couldn't bring their NES because their mom or dad would have a conniption if they, like, right, brought video games to a family outing. And, like, poring over and reading all the, like, there was a decent amount of backstory in that manual. And that's how you got the backstory for, like, Mega Man or for, like, Mario, because there's none of that in the gameplay. It's right. all in the manual.
Right, yeah. I mean, these days, I mean, as you mentioned prior, they don't even, like, add any type of manual, and if so, it's digital. I know, like, maybe just because I'm lazy, but I don't feel like going out of my way to look at something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless, I don't really even look at the manual that anyway.
Well, the reality is you don't need manuals anymore because it's all built into... The tutorials are built into the game and all the background
story. They explain it exactly at the very beginning of the game anyway, but, I mean, it's nostalgic. I do kind of enjoy looking at the older manuals, especially for the older games, for like NES, SNES, sometimes PlayStation, but mainly for that era.
I should do a whole episode on NES manuals. There's a game I'll show you later that it's a manual for this. I can't even remember the title of it anymore. It's Clash of Demon Head. That manual is batshit crazy.
Is it?
It's awesome. Kind of, I guess, you know, rounded back to Metroid again. I know, I apologize, listeners. I know we've been off topic, and we're going to be apologizing for the whole episode. So buckle in. You're here now. so the Metroid or the game manual in Metroid gave you a lot of backstory about why Samus was going to this planet, what it was for, and like, you know what? It's a perfect segue. Let's talk about the story of Metroid and like what. It kind of based it off. It was based off the Alien movies. Mm-hmm. Like, how each... Basically, Samus was going to a planet to rescue... Or to find out... To discover this baby Metroid. And so for some reason, you're always fighting Ridley, a space pirate, but she's a dragon? I never understood that.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't... I didn't really look too much into it. Because I'm not... I mean, I'm more familiar with kind of like Metroid 2 and Metroid Fusion. I mean, because obviously Fusion's my first, but something about the planet SR388, like, that's where the fun is, in my opinion. I know this one takes place on Zebes, but,
The name, I mean, just, like, I guess, like, just fun facts about Metroid now. I mean, because, like, the storyline, it's pretty much, storyline first. Well, the storyline, pretty much, you go to... Zebes. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't even know.
But you're trying to investigate what I think. I didn't even read the manual before this. So you know what? Crucify me online. I don't care. But you're going to see what the deal is with this baby Metroid, and you take it back with you, and then the baby Metroid, I believe, either escapes or gets. I forget what happens in Metroid 2, but in Super Metroid, you know, you leave the Metroid in the hands of the scientist, and then Ridley comes in and destroys the space station that you're at, and so you have to escape. And that, I mean, I could do, like, Super Metroid is one of the best design games, just period.
Yep.
And it's really, and I don't think people give the original Metroid enough credit for how much it obviously an influence because it's part of the same series. That's a dumb thing. It's a like an obvious thing to say, but I think it's even more so. Like, people always talk about the first part of Super Metroid and how much it teaches you. That's awesome, but like the first part of Metroid does the exact same thing in a much simpler way. But like, you know, just by running to the right and going back to the left. Going back to the left was not an uncommon thing by the time Super Metroid came out. It was brand new during the original Metroid. And even, like, I think you said this about the Morph Ball.
Yeah, I based on the Nintendo's capabilities, they had trouble making Samus, you know, crawl and crouch, so they just decided to make it easier into a Morph Ball, and that alone is just legendary in itself.
It's interesting how limitations influence design in a big way, and I think one of the reasons why a lot of people say modern games aren't as good as old games... I mean, let's not forget, there's a lot of shit on the NES. There's a lot of bad games.
Call me crazy. I think it's more shit than not. It's just that the good ones are so good that they overlook all the bad ones.
No, I 100% agree. Yeah. That's almost like... That it's almost like Nintendo's motif. Mm-hmm. You look at the GameCube, and there's like 5 or 6 fantastic games. When their games are good, they're really freaking good.
Yep.
Everything else falls under the shit category. And a couple good third-party games. And it's no different on the NES. But like Metroid, it's just interesting because like that was so against Nintendo's philosophy at the time, which was just cranking out Mario and Zelda. And then there's a game that comes along that isn't necessarily about the action so much. It's about the exploration.
Yeah.
And Zelda, I guess, is like that, too. Zelda was a new thing. But I'm not even sure what exactly Gunpei did on it. I think he was a producer. But
yeah,
he did influence it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he was incredibly influential when it came to Nintendo. I mean, as you outlined in your previous podcast, I mean, like, if you're playing with a D-pad, thank him. Seriously. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, I mean, it goes without saying with all these handhelds that are going out. Well, I mean, not all these handhelds. I mean, still Nintendo is, like, the top dog when it comes to handhelds. But, you pay homage to the Game Boy that way. But, in terms of, we were talking about exploration and Legend of Zelda and things like that. I feel like, because Metroid was, like, two-dimensional platformer.
Yeah. It's
very similar to Super Mario Brothers. I mean, Super Mario Brothers, like... one of the greatest selling video games of all time, one of the easily the arguably the greatest game of all time based on
just its influence.
Absolutely, yeah. I feel like Metroid took that formula and just added to it. I mean, of course, made it fresh in its own way.
It changed the formula.
Yeah.
I guess to kind of segue into our final topic, I mean, I know we've been all over the place, but I kind of like it. To segue into kind of our final topic, Metroid is probably I would argue it's the most influential game on the NES. Now, I'm not saying it's the most important game, mm-hmm. but it's the most influential. Because Mario is the most important.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Without Mario, we don't have video games. No one can deny that. I think what made... maybe not the most influential, but maybe Metroid would be one of the... I would put it up there with Mario. Like, Mario, Zelda, and Metroid, I would argue, are the trendy of most influential games in terms of design. Because don't get me wrong, Mega Man is a fantastic series,
mm-hmm.
it's a great game, but it basically just took Mario and what if Mario had a gun. That's pretty much what it is.
Essentially,
and I'm not trying to knock it. It's a very well-designed series. The music, of course, is fantastic. But it's basically Mario with a gun. And once again, nothing wrong with that. One of my favorite series. Zelda and Metroid flipped all the scripts on it. It is no longer just a linear left to right. It's an exploration-based game. Mm-hmm. Zelda basically is like Metroid top-down, and Metroid is like Zelda on its side.
Right.
But... those games, because of the way they designed them, like, you wouldn't have, like you mentioned before, Castlevania Symphony of the Night or the Metroidvania game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have pretty much any open-world game. Grand Theft Auto, you could probably trace design of Grand Theft Auto back to Metroid in some way, shape, or form, because any open-world game, it's exploration-based. Mm-hmm. Metroid started that. Metroid and Zelda started the exploration-based game, and each one had its own thing. Zelda was more of literally like burn every bush. Metroid was more like, let's look at every door. Let's see everything. Let's try to use your bombs on every single block because there's a lot of invisible, like, destroyable blocks that you can take out. It upped the secrets. Like, you know, Mario, the first time when you're playing the original Mario, what was your first reaction when you hit an invisible block?
I was just like, oh, I didn't even know that was there. Like, and then now it's habitual, going back and playing. You know everything, just, you know, going back to what we talked about at the beginning of the segment, how right away, if you ever play Metroid again, everyone knows, gotta go left first before you go right.
Exactly, it's the same thing, and that whole secret mentality mm-hmm. then applies to further in the game, like, where you will bomb every single square to see, like, can I fall through this? Can I jump up through this? Or you'll just shoot random squares with your blaster, trying to see, like, can I go up through this and explore more of this world? I would say the other reason why it's very influential is because it was very atmospheric.
Mm-hmm.
The music is meant to make you unsettled.
Right.
Like, not unsettled, that was horrible. That was really bad grammar. But it makes you feel unsettled. It makes you feel like you're not necessarily in control. Like, this planet isn't here for fun. It's out to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of fear and ominous sense you get from it, like, pervades in all of it.
Right. I mean, the only one... I mean, of course, there are... in certain stages, there's music that represents that type of feeling in, you know, Mario and Zelda, you know, when you go to Bowser's Castle, or when you fight Ganon. But this, overall, was just...
gives you a feeling of dread.
Exactly, yeah. In the beginning, not. It's like, okay, yeah, we're going on an adventure, very similar to Legend of Zelda and Mario, but it's like, right when you get to the next room, it's like, okay, this is different.
Yes, exactly. And the very first thing is that dun da ga da dun da ga da dun da ga da dun da ga da dun. It's almost a little Zelda-ish. And then you get to, like, what was it, Norfair, I think, was the first one that you explored by accident? Where it goes in, like, dun, 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 and then all of a sudden it's just more hollow. Like, it just hear do-do-do-do. And that's it.
I still think Metroid 2 has the creepiest music out of all of them, though.
Yeah, the Game Boy Metroid 2, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why I was just thinking, like, you're not talking about Metroid Prime.
Well, I don't know if you heard about it or looked videos up, but some programmer, he created a Metroid 2 sequel, and it's really well done. It's run on the Fusion Engine.
Really?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I know Nintendo took it off, and it was one of the trending things on Facebook copyright.
But I know there's a mirror site up there.
But I would highly suggest looking into it. It's very well done.
I'm going to have to check it out.
It's purely fan-made, too. Music's good.
I'm going to have to check that out, then.
But what was your first experience, like, playing, like, the original Metroid? Like, besides Prime? Because I know if you had Prime and if you had Fusion, you could use the Game Boy Link to play the original Metroid, and I always wanted to do that as a kid, but I never had a Prime, so I could never do it. But, like, what was your first experience with...
Mine? Because, like I said, I don't know if I said it before in this episode, but I didn't grow up... Oh, I've said it in other episodes. I didn't grow up with the NES.
Yes.
So I didn't actually get to experience it until, I would say, like, maybe 5-6 years ago on an emulator on top of that.
Right.
It was before I even owned the game. Actually, it was probably further back than that, because I don't think I actually collected when I first played this. I think I tried it out on an emulator, and I remember getting very frustrated the fact that I couldn't find out where I was going, because it does not hold your hand. It's meant for you to literally just spend hours and hours and hours exploring, which sucks, because, like I said before, as adults, we don't really have the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to do, like, save states and stuff like that. So, but the first time I played it, if I remember correctly, it took me a little bit to figure out how to get the Morph Ball. And when I finally figured it out, I'm like, oh, that's... And I started comparing, like, that's in Metroid Prime. And then I would get something else. I'm like, oh, that's, like, in Metroid Prime. And, like, I would seem like, that's where they got it all. I had the same kind of realization with Donkey Kong 64. That was, like, that's my first video game. And it's the same type of thing where I'm like, oh. And when I went back and played Donkey Kong Country, oh, that's where they got that from. That enemy, that skill, that whatever. So I think Metroid, my first impression of it was just kind of a little bit of amazement, like how much there was to do in such what I, at the time, I thought was a primitive game.
Right.
And now, you know, now that I'm older, I realize it's not primitive at all. Maybe the graphics are, but the game design itself is not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, mine was somewhat similar to yours. I played it for the first time around the time I got Fusion, sometime around that, on an emulator, and actually in school. I was in seventh grade, and we had computers. We had, like, maybe three computers in the class, and my one friend at the time, he I mean, of course, I was 12, and I'm like, oh my god, like, how'd you get, like, all these games, all these, like, 30 yeah. SNES and NES games on a disc? Like, oh my, like, you know, now it's kind of like it's easy to say in the world. It's easy,
you can just go to, just exactly. Google it, and there you are.
Yeah, but I thought it was, like, the coolest thing back then, so he brought it in, and then we, you know, whenever it's, in elementary school, whenever it was raining, we had what we call, I guess, I mean, we would have recess in our classroom, but we had, like, a rainy day box that had, like, old board games and whatnot in it, and, we could go on the computer if we wanted to, and that was the first time I ever played it. He brought in the disc, and then I we played it on an emulator. I think the emulator was actually called Nesticle.
Yeah. When I was getting into emulation, that was the first. I ended up not getting it, but I was like, what a weird. And, you know, being much younger, I'm like, huh, it was like testicle. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's an old one. I think it came out in like 95, and I think it was meant for DOS, but it's still actually out there, which is cool, but,
yeah.
Yeah, it's beside the point. But, yeah, that's the first time I played it.
All right. Well, that's about all I really had for Metro. Do you have any, like, final closing things to say? Any, like, interesting facts that you can think of? I mean, I think we covered most of the ones.
No, I don't. I mean, it's a great game nonetheless. I mean, of course, there are going to be some pretty bad ones in any kind of franchise in the bunch. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Goes without saying, Other but M. regardless, believe it or not, I actually didn't mind Under M, but that's because I sold it Five Below brand new for $5.
Okay.
So if I paid it, you know,
$60 or and then got it,
I'd be pissed too. So I understand. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know Federation Force isn't very good either. I didn't really care.
That's new though.
Yeah, right? That is new. I didn't really, not really my cup of tea, but
I didn't try it yet.
It is what it is. But that's hopefully all I gotta
say. Hopefully there'll be a new Metroid game for the Switch, or I don't think they're going to make one for the Wii U now, but for the Switch when that comes out.
I think you're right. I think it's too late
but,
in development.
All right. So thank you for taking us all over the place, Casey, and me for also not helping drive it back.
Too much fun with this.
It was a lot of fun. If you guys, please actually comment in and tell us about your, like, first experiences with Metroid, what you thought of it, and correct us for all the shit that we got wrong, because I'm fairly certain I said a lot of wrong stuff.
Yeah, I mean, as Josh mentioned, this was not something that we grew up with. We played it way down the road.
But have a big appreciation now. Absolutely. For it, now that we
Absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
So, yes, until next time, guys, I will see you in another week or so.
Stay care.